Representative Julie Sandstead is the Democratic candidate for Minnesota House District 6A. This district includes communities in St. Louis, Itasca, and Coochaching counties, places like Hibbing and Chisholm and Nashwauk and Effie. Representative Sandstead is back with us now. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So why do you want to run for re-election?
Because my work is not done. I ran for office in 2016, and I've served two terms, and there is still more work to do. I definitely have a heart for serving people, and the needs of the people in my district have not become less. They certainly are every bit as what they used to be before, and with COVID even more so. We now have an opportunity to get more done.
Well, you mentioned the work to be done at the legislature, but I know you work in the schools, and I'm curious what it's been like for you during COVID as a teacher.
So this is my 26th year of teaching, of active, you know, in the classroom working with the kids. And it is the most unusual year that I have ever had as a teacher. The kids are great. The families have been great, but the rules are very different with social distancing. And I work with young kids right now. My assignment is kindergarten, first grade, second grade in a music room. And like I said, everybody is in this together and they're all very cooperative, but it's really different. It's very difficult to understand little ones with masks over their face. The protocols that are in place for, you know, keeping people safe and healthy, both students and staff, is very, very stringent, and it's not what we're accustomed to. And I know that as a teacher too, while my district started out doing in person, many districts have started out maybe in person or a hybrid model, but then we also are trying to accommodate families that have children that are trying to distance learn. And that is a huge challenge because up in this area, many of our families don't have connectivity or the broadband necessary. Really, the world of education, and especially the younger learners that we work with, we are relational people, and we are trained professionally to instruct in person. So doing everything online or in a hybrid model or distance is very, very challenging. And certainly it's putting a huge challenge on school districts to meet the technology needs, the academic needs. And then we're, you know, absolutely having to remain, you know, focused on the mental health needs, the social and emotional well-being of our students. So it's been a year like no other, to be sure. That's from inside the walls, but I think for families too. I mean, even in my own family, we have a student who's doing a hybrid model, a student who's doing a distance learning model, and as workers and then trying to support your student from home or in a hybrid model, that takes a toll on families too. So it's a challenge, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, I want to stick with issues related to the pandemic. As I've been conducting these candidate interviews, many of the Republicans, your opponent, Republican Rob Farnsworth, spoke pretty openly about their almost anger with Governor Walz and how his administration has handled the pandemic. So I want to give you the opportunity to respond to that.
Absolutely. So first of all, I want to say it's really easy when you live in glass castles to throw stones, and we shouldn't be doing that. Never in my history, you know, of 50 plus years of life, have we ever lived through something like this as a society that's so accustomed to immediate gratification and having resolutions and solutions right now. And so even though our country faced something like this in the early 1900s, that hasn't been our reality. So now we're getting a taste of it for the first time. And it really is counterintuitive to our way of life. And people, we don't have great patience for it. And we're not, you know, this isn't pleasant. This is a major inconvenience. But it is a real virus and it is a real health concern for many, many people. And it is a virus that does not play favorites for one over another. And we have to be respectful and cognizant of each other. With that being said, I do think that as time has gone on, there is an opportunity to look at things on more of a regional level or a regional level or a take action by a zip code or see, you know, it isn't, in my opinion, something where one size fits all. And I do think our governor is doing as good a job as anybody could do in a situation like this. And I think it's, again, it's very easy to point fingers, and it is an election year. And that's completely the reason that the GOP is doing this. They're capitalizing on it for that reason alone. But I do need to say that we are no different than 48 other states and all of the U.S. territories. Every single state in our nation, with the exception of Wisconsin, has emergency powers. Minnesota is no different. And the U.S. territories as well. So with that, there comes some ability to remain flexible. And I'm ready for the debate. I'm happy to take up the debate and have that conversation and really figure out what would be the best fit for Minnesota. But again, I think it's just really easy to kind of capitalize on it and opportunize on it because it is an election year. When in reality, you know, this is unprecedented times. And I think it's very easy to, you know, poke holes and try to blame people when they're, you know, you're not in the driver's seat. I think it's very easy to do that.
We're talking with Representative Julie Stanstead today. She is running to keep her seat. She's a Democrat for Minnesota House District 6A. So let's talk about what some of that political divisiveness has meant in St. Paul, especially when it comes to things locally, places like the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Togo. Tell us a little bit about this and if what you know about the future of it right now.
So COVID, you know, as I said, played no favorites, and it took a toll on everybody's economy. And, you know, Itasca County, St. Louis County is no exception. The Department of Corrections, and part of this was even prior to COVID with a death of a warden, not a warden, but one of the guards, I believe, a safety guard or something in one of our state facilities where MnCOR money was being generated, and those programs had to be shut down in order just to keep, you know, staffing safe. And so part of that revenue would go into the Department of Corrections budget to fund all of their programs, including MCF Togo. So when we lost the MnCOR money and we lost just with the impact of COVID, MCF Togo was hit very hard, or I should say the Department of Corrections was hit hard, and decisions needed to be made in order to have a balanced budget that is required by the state of Minnesota. We're one of the states that cannot go with a budget with a budget that is not balanced. And so their plan was to close MCF Togo. And while I understand the finances of the situation, I really do think it was a penny-wise, pound-foolish kind of decision. It was done quickly. It was done without, I think, a real thorough kind of going through, or without input of the legislators locally, without input from the communities, and without even the possibility of looking at other solutions. So I took it upon myself and challenged the governor and called upon him to reverse the decision, to really pump the brakes on this. And we've had some action on it. We've had some hearings in the House as a result of this. I know that we have a commitment on part of the speaker, on part of the House. I understand that Senator Gazelka has an appetite for this. This is really one of the areas where we've been able to work across the aisle. This isn't a Democrat-Republican thing. The legislators in the range or up on the range here have been very good about working together and speaking in a unified voice. And we strongly believe this facility needs to remain open, primarily because of the quality of the program. The uniqueness and the quality of the program, it saves lives. It actually saves money in the long run because it's a very intensive, shorter term sentence than, you know, an inmate may receive otherwise. And we need these jobs on the range. We cannot afford to lose any more good paying jobs with benefits. So right now we are going back into a special session in October. By all indications, and all indications are that we are going to be passing a supplemental budget bill. So we won't have to see the closure of MCF Togo. And if that doesn't work, then I have a plan B up my sleeve for how we can keep this open. But I am confident that the legislature is going to come through on this. And I think we had hoped to get it done in September, but there wasn't agreement between the four leadership. But I think we've got 3 out of 4 right now. So we're very close. And by October, I'm feeling confident we'll get this done.
Well, we are almost out of time, but I do want to give you the opportunity to respond to another thing that happened in your district, where Cleveland Cliffs is acquiring ArcelorMittal USA. That's the Minorca mine in Virginia and Hibbing Taconite. What does this mean for the region?
I think this is a really positive thing. Cliffs has been a very strong player in our region, one of 3 major companies. And in terms of the FR site right now, what this does is, first of all, it bolsters. This purchase, this agreement is kind of a win-win, and I made a statement about this. But this is good because Cliffs really has been focusing on a domestic steel product, and that's kind of their footprint. And they do that very, very well. This only continues to bolster that, that strengthens their domestic presence. For Arcelor has been taking on more of a global approach in the steel industry, and this buyout allows them to kind of keep their focus globally. The third player up here is U.S. Steel, who has not articulated in the 4 years that I've been in office really any interest in the SR site. So this is my opinion, but I think this is an excellent and a very positive, encouraging transaction, because not only does it strengthen the domestic steel industry, but it also takes one more cook, if you will, out of the kitchen in terms of the SR site. And now with there being 2 major players in that, between Cliffs and U.S. Steel, and U.S. Steel really not even expressing an interest in it, I personally feel that it should probably go to Cliffs. They have demonstrated a wherewithal in our community, a competency, a commitment. You know, what they say they will do, they have done. They have been solid on their financials. So I feel very confident in that company moving forward. And I would like something has to happen at the SR site. In the time, again, that I've been here, and this problem has been going on longer than my time in office. But it is time to get something done. This is, doing nothing else is the definition of insanity. So something needs to happen, and especially now with COVID, with MCF Togo, you know, potentially on the line here, with 380 workers furloughed indefinitely at Keytec. Those people need to go to work somewhere. And U.S. Steel has indicated they have no intention of selling, and they have no intention of opening up that site and running it again. So these workers are basically sitting in limbo, and they need to work. They need to go somewhere, and they need to have a good paying job. The life of HIBTAC is very short at this point. I mean, there's only 4 to 5 years, really, before things drastically slow down. And with Cliffs making the transaction that they did, hopefully there will be an opportunity for them to move towards the Nashwauk site, towards the SR site, which would be a win for the potential, like, of 1,000 jobs at HIBTAC, upwards of 1,000 jobs that would be, you know, at risk in the next couple of years. So I'm very encouraged by this. I'm very supportive of Cliff. It's time that something happens at the SR site. I think with this transaction, it really kind of moves the needle in that direction a little bit. I'm going to really be encouraging the DNR and the governor to be looking hard at that. December is coming. I don't think we should be waiting as long as December at all. I think we should be taking back the leases. And then as the state, we have the right to do that. We should be doing that. And then we should be, in short order, making a plan to who they should be going to and what that's going to look like.
That is Representative Julie Sandstead. You can see more on her campaign to keep her seat at the House District 6A. She's the DFL candidate. It's juliesandstead.com. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Heidi. Have a great day.